Thanks, Steve. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. Welcome to the show. Want to call us? Want to text us? 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy.
Top of the morning to you, Billy.
Thank you. Did you watch the State of the Union address last night?
I watched every minute of it.
And?
Why do you put me on the spot like this? Here's what I'll say.
Yeah? Well, you have to say it out loud.
I know.
You can't just think it.
He did a decent job.
Yeah.
I thought, I have a lot of vitriol when I watch politicians,
yes.
All of them.
Yes, agreed.
And I thought he did a decent enough job. He stayed on script. I like the people he brought up, those World War II veterans. I wondered how they didn't have to get up and go to the bathroom during it, because it was a very long speech.
Yeah.
And I'm mad at people poking fun at Nancy Pelosi just for being back there. One comment I saw on Facebook, did she have a stroke or something? What's with her face? Now, is that funny? I don't really understand.
I don't know.
I wondered what kind of lozenge she had in her mouth.
Good question.
And Mike Pence just looked like a proud papa just staring at his son.
Well, he does this thing, and I guess this is what the vice president has to do during the State of the Union, where it's a subtle nod of approval, a constant subtle nod of approval, where his head just keeps, you know,
with a nice little smile, like,
yeah.
I'm approving of everything.
Yes.
And all I could think of was the thought bubble over his head, like, I wonder what kind of ice cream we have in the freezer at home.
Maybe.
It just
possibly
seemed blank. And I want to know who the announcer, Madam Speaker, I present to you the President of the United States.
That guy's been doing it for a while.
That's the Sergeant at Arms, I believe.
For the House of Representatives,
yeah,
correct?
Right, right. Yeah.
And he's been doing it for many years?
I don't know how many years, but I've seen him before.
I like him.
And I don't know if he's available for private parties, because I think that would be a novel way to start up whatever affair you have going, is to have him come out and do the intro. That would be nice.
I think his name is Paul Irving.
Wow.
Just looked him up.
Mary,
yeah,
excellent.
Sergeant at Arms of
yeah.
the United States.
Seems House like a fun
House.
Man.
Yeah.
He does?
Has a good time. Yeah.
I think he gets paid extra for that.
Yeah, you get a couple extra bucks for that. You punch in.
Yeah.
You show, look, extra time on Tuesday night.
That amused me. I guess I never paid attention before.
There's a couple things about it that I understand why it happens, but by the same token, the standing ovations are ridiculous.
Oh my God, it should be like a high school graduation where you cannot applaud until the end.
That speech, and again, for anybody listening who likes President Trump, this isn't just for Donald Trump. This is for anyone who's
yes.
the president who does the State of the Union. Last night's speech was a 22-minute speech that stretched out for an hour and 10 minutes, you know, because there's a lot of applause and there's a lot of standing ovations and stuff. And realistically, think about all the things you've ever attended. How many standing ovations have you done in your lifetime? And yesterday, were there 41, 42 standing ovations during that speech?
There were quite too many.
Anytime anyone said anything where there were three words in a row that they recognized, they started to applaud like maniacs and stand up. I know it's a pep rally. I understand that it's a pep rally, but it's an unrealistic pep rally. You know, I know it's well-intentioned to bring out people in extreme circumstances, and that's what a lot of yesterday is. And again, it's not just President Trump who does this. That's part of the show that is this speech. But I don't know. I understand the importance of the vets and of the Holocaust survivors and the kids with cancer, but to some extent, it's showboating, isn't it?
That's what it is.
It just really is.
And to be honest, Barack Obama during some...
Every president.
I mean, yes.
They all do it.
They all do it. Parade these people.
Yeah.
Who
are used as
pawns.
Honestly.
Totally, 100%.
You know?
Those people
need to be saluted. They have been through incredible circumstances, but... I don't know. Are we to think that President Trump had some hand in making their lives better in any way, shape, or form? And again, if you're a Donald Trump supporter, I'm not just blaming him. It's the game. It's
right.
The way the game is played.
And the women in white were commented on Facebook, too. You know, they made fools of themselves. And I have to be honest with you. I know that they wore it in solidarity to stick together. Was it because Nancy Pelosi was wearing white?
I don't think. I think it's the other way around. I'm almost sure that she heard about this and said, and I want in on this as well. Yeah. Yeah.
And Donald Trump's tie was crooked at the beginning and it was driving me nuts. It was not.
That didn't even make my top 100. You know, there was so much yesterday.
So those are my takes on things. And, you know, somebody's like, oh, you feel bad that people are making fun of Nancy Pelosi, but what about people making fun of Donald Trump? There's a lot to be made fun of with him, in my opinion. The tie crooked was bugging me last night, and I thought he stayed on script. And
for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few times I yelled at the TV, but I really felt like he did what he was supposed to do. I was waiting for a big finish about the wall.
Right.
So I was
a big finish in terms of some agreement there. Or
no,
what?
I just really expected him to be more to instill more pressure on the Dems to agree. I thought at the very end that's how I really thought he was going to do some big push at the end, and he didn't.
Well, so many people after the speech, and even this morning I was listening to the discussion on Steve's show, were saying that the speech was really a two-sided speech, and it was, because he said we all need to come, I mean, they always say this during the speech, the need to come together, right?
Yeah, but you have to practice what you preach, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's where I had issues with it. It's like he said the right things.
Well,
but you have to act on what you say.
Right. These speeches, these State of the Union speeches are always so idyllic. And here's what we want to have happen. But then, sadly, they're just words. I wish they were more than just words, but in the end, they are just words. How many of those beautiful pictures that were painted last night are going to come to fruition? They're just words. And at some point, people always talk about how you get more grizzled as you get older. When you're younger, you see those things and you go, yeah. But then when you're older, you go, I've heard this stuff before.
I've heard it a lot from a lot of presidents.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also, as unpatriotic as this is about to sound, let me explain it. That constant thing where people just yell, USA, USA, USA. It's ridiculous. It's not just a word. It's not just an idea. Make it happen. Don't just because you're all chanting the name of the country at the same time doesn't do any good. You have to work at it. You have to make something happen.
And when people are chanting USA, is that in support of Donald Trump? Because some people, yes. Some people,
I think
no.
In some cases, right. I think it goes along with the message of, look, great America within reach. Let's work together and get there. But then they're just words. Nobody follows up. Nobody makes it happen afterwards. It's like all the campaign speeches you hear from candidates before the election. I would love for somebody to keep a scorecard and go, look, he promised this, he promised this, he promised this. None of that stuff happened.
Well, I did do a fact check after the speech to see what was accurate and what was not.
How did it look?
There were a couple of true things. You know, and this is according to the New York Times. And then, you know, it gets frustrating because you have fans of Donald Trump that say, oh, well, the New York Times is fake news.
Sure.
I don't know how to bring people together. I truly don't.
Well, anyone who went into last night liking him is going to like him more. And anyone who went in not liking him is going to not like him more. I would love to see how many people were persuaded by what they saw last night. You know?
I don't know. The white, of course, a nod to the women of the suffragette movement who wore white as they campaigned for the right to vote. I'm sorry, I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's do this. We'd love to hear from you. What did you see last night? Did it sway you in any way on the good side, on the bad side? What were your thoughts about last night's State of the Union address? We're at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Laff, it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about last night's State of the Union address. What'd you think? We're at 312-981-7200. One of the side stories of this was a little boy that was invited, and they didn't really spend any time on him. You only knew about this if you read about it in the papers or online. There's an 11-year-old boy. His name is Joshua Trump. He lives in Delaware. He is often, this was according to his parents, he is often teased and made fun of and belittled by his classmates for the simple reason is that he shares the same last name as the president, Donald Trump. So his mom and dad sent a letter saying, our little boy, you know, a good kid, but he gets ripped on every day just because he's got the same last name.
And that's so unfortunate.
So he shows up at this thing, and then they show him in the audience, and he's sleeping. That's not good. I wonder if he'll be teased more by his classmates now that they saw him on national television sleeping during the speech.
My guess?
Yes. Yes. A Twitter user named Individual Juan, I don't know anything about him other than this tweet. This was his comment even prior to the sleeping. He said, poor Joshua Trump, what kind of a lowlife would use a person's name to mock and bully them? By the way, Joshua will be seated in the same row as Lion Ted, Little Marco, Crying Chuck, and Crooked Hillary.
Lion Ted looks, I think he looks pretty good
very
with the
woodsy.
Beard.
Very woodsy.
Did you like it? I thought it was a good look for him.
I've seen him. He has looked this Jeremiah Johnson-y way for a couple of weeks now. So, yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's still Ted Cruz underneath the beard.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's hard to erase that part of it.
What did you think about what he was saying and how he was saying it?
Well, as you mentioned, when he sticks to the script, you know, you'd have to really be a fool to mess up those words. They're very inspirational words, and it's speeches that you always hear during these things. America's great, but all we need to do is try a little bit harder, work together, reach across that aisle. I've heard it 1,000 times.
What about him bringing up the investigation?
That was crazy.
It was unusual, but that was...
Still got applause. I mean, everything got applause yesterday. He could have done anything. He could have just said Milk Duds and people would have stood up and applauded. I would have, actually, for Milk Duds. I like Milk Duds.
Well, I hate to use the term presidential because that's what you expect from a president.
That's right. That comes
so
with the kit.
I don't even like to... Exactly.
You get that. When you buy the president kit, they give you that. Sound presidential because you're the president. Everybody always makes a big deal out of that. Whoa, he sounded so presidential. Well, because on his business card, it says president.
Bill, I wanted to believe what he was saying last night.
Sure.
I really did.
We all do.
Honestly, I'm thinking he did a decent job, but I don't know who wrote it. They did a great job.
Yeah.
It really was, he performed well.
Yeah.
Is it a performance?
Yeah.
Because talking about the country coming together, where is that when he's not scripted?
Where is that,
hey, you guys, we ought to come together? I don't hear that. It's poking fun of the other side all the time.
Yeah, I know. So I always wonder who sits down with him prior to this.
And who does he listen to?
And says, now we have a couple of different Donald Trumps that can come out tomorrow night. It can be read the script, sound like the president, Donald Trump, or it can be you. It can be the guy who just speaks off the top of his head and embellishes. So which one is it best to pull out for the puppet show tomorrow night? You know, somebody has to do that with him.
Representative Lois Frankel, a Democrat from Florida, invited women from both sides of the aisle to wear the symbolic attire last week. And she said, we'll honor all those who came before us and send a message of solidarity that we are not going back on our hard-earned rights. She is the chairwoman of the House Democratic Women's Working Group. This is the second time female lawmakers were encouraged to don white while watching the high-profile speech in person after Trump's inauguration in 2017 and the massive women's march that followed in Washington. Frankel decided to call on colleagues to show solidarity. We wear white to unite against any attempts by the Trump administration to roll back the incredible progress women have made in the last century. We will continue to support the advancement of women.
A texter says, I think I saw Tiffany wearing a white dress last night, and I thought the same thing. There was a brief camera shot. Yeah, she was there. She was sitting behind somebody who the president called attention to, so you could see her for a little bit, and it was kind of a cream-colored white dress, and I wondered if that was intentional or if it just played out that way.
Tiffany's kind of a rebel in the Trump family, correct?
Of his kids, yeah. I guess, yeah.
Ivanka looked beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know who the woman was to Ivanka's left. To the right of her as you're looking at the TV screen, but I saw her a lot. Barron, I did not see.
Didn't see him. No.
And Melania looked beautiful.
Right.
She did.
Yeah. One glove.
Oh, I didn't notice that. She's a big fan of Michael Jackson's.
Yeah.
And in support of him for the new documentary coming out, perhaps.
Is that what
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I'm not sure the significance of just wearing the one glove.
One glove.
That was the song they played her in with. Yeah. She got the biggest applause of the night.
She just sure did.
Showed up and she got huge applause.
A nice little shout out from her husband, the First Lady of the United States. That was very nice. That's when the applause happened, and it was... I was watching it, and I wanted to believe. That's all I can say. I thought he did a good job.
Then they succeeded, because if that's the goal, is to make you believe that there are better times ahead, I think a lot of people probably walked out going, well, I guess they are going to try harder, but let's see if they're going to try harder.
But that's just it. What I heard and what I watched gave me a little bit of hope, but you have to back up what you say.
Right.
That's all I'm worried about.
Isn't it sort of disconcerting, though? And again, I'm gonna say that it's not just Donald Trump. It's the way the game is always, always, always played. When something is said and exactly half of the room applauds and cheers and the other half just sits, because it shows the divide that they keep saying they're trying to fix. But in reality, if you're wearing a blue hat, you're applauding and cheering. If you're wearing a red hat and the other way around... That's upsetting to me, is that no one truly speaks their mind and says, look, I'm on one side, but I really I believe in this, or I'm on that side, but I don't believe in that. It's amazing to me. If you stood up in any auditorium and said something, it would never be divided that way.
Right. And it's only getting worse.
It's always getting worse.
And so there, I should have written it down. I'm sorry I didn't take notes like you did. But there was something that President Trump said. Yes, I called him President Trump. And there was a little bit of maybe a low, dull roar of discontent that happened.
What and was Nancy, it?
I don't remember what it was, but I remember Nancy Pelosi kind of holding her hand up like, come on, calm down.
Oh.
I totally noticed that. And I thought that was great. She doesn't want to turn this into a hooting and hollering kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I thought everybody acted respectful.
Honestly, for the most part, yes.
And that's not what I expected, and I was happy to see it.
Right, right.
All I got is
Kavanaugh
hope, Bill.
Kavanaugh was there without a Heineken. That's progress.
He had one under his robe, I think.
As soon as it was over, you heard a pull tab being yanked, which is the theme of the evening anyway. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's been a very strange week for people who have said or done things that could be perceived as racist, only for them to either apologize or deny that they're racist or something like that. Right?
Liam Neeson, of course, the
Liam
big one.
Liam Neeson, we talked about yesterday. You had the picture, the Klansman picture.
Joe Ricketts
comes to mind immediately. Now, that's the story that broke yesterday morning. We didn't really talk about it much yesterday. I wanted to digest it myself just a little bit to figure out what exactly was going on. And I thought the most interesting thing of the whole thing was the statement from Tom Ricketts from the Cubs, who said in these words, he said, "We are aware of racially insensitive emails in my father's account that were published by an online media outlet. Let me be clear, the language and views expressed in those emails have no place in our society," which is exactly what needed to be said. I give him high marks for that. He then goes on to say, "My father is not involved with the operation of the Chicago Cubs in any way. I am trusted with representing this organization and our fans with a respect for people from all backgrounds. These emails do not reflect the culture we've worked so hard to build at the Chicago Cubs since 2009. Again, that needed to be said. It was very well said. But I'm trying to think about the internal struggle of him where he goes, I have to say that even though he's my dad, he is not involved with this business at all. Just so you know.
Is that true?
That seems to be the case. So his money, his Ameritrade money, is what made the family very, very wealthy and then ended up purchasing the Cubs. But on a daily basis, his dad is not in the office saying, sign this guy, get this guy, move that wall over there, paint that this. He's not doing that. But think about what would have to happen in almost anybody's family for you to write a letter saying, my dad, I'm sorry about my dad. We got a family business and we want you to keep coming to the games and watching the games. He's not involved in this. That had to be
It happens more than you think, where somebody's parents do something stupid.
Oh, I'm positive that happens all the time. Or a family, not just parents, but a family member says or does something, and then you have to make the decision, do I make it publicly known that there's a disconnect, that even though he's my dad and I love him, what he just said is horrible, and please don't let it affect the family business. Please, 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 because that's kind of what that letter is.
And with good reason.
Right. So now the question is, what needs to be done? People are still wondering about Cubs' involvement. People are still saying, what if a Muslim player wanted to come and play for the Cubs and then heard about this?
Well, what were these? I don't know the exact extent of the emails.
It was an email chain with some racist things that were said that he kind
about
of endorsed.
About players and stuff?
Not about players.
Oh, okay, just about.
Just in general.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wonder what the lasting effect is. And I wonder if the Cubs need to do anything beyond this. If what he says is true and there's no reason to believe otherwise, he really isn't involved. He's the father of the Ricketts family. But do you hold them or the team responsible? I don't know. I wouldn't.
That's why I always tell my kids, you know, do the right thing, but most importantly, don't do the wrong thing that will embarrass me.
That's solid advice. That's very solid advice.
Well, I mean, we all try, you know, I never wanted my mom to look bad, so I would try and do things.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because you do, for most of us, we kind of do our best to envision that larger picture.
Yeah, but
so
and when you're
sure,
younger.
I'm positive if this guy was getting emails that were upsetting, he had a couple of options. You know, he could have said, oh, please, don't send me this sort of thing. I don't want to know about this. Just leave this. Or he could do what he did, which is say, oh, that's great. Keep it up. Love this sort of thing.
Well, young people are too inexperienced to think about the big picture, and older people don't care.
There's a lot to that.
I mean, really.
Although, to be fair to him for a second, to Joe Ricketts, the father in
How
this.
How old is he?
He quickly apologized, I think late 70s, 77.
He's not that old.
77. Why, were you thinking he'd be even older than that and had lost a marble or two?
But just didn't care anymore because it's like, that's young.
Yeah.
Don wants to jump into the conversation. Hey, Don, how's it going?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm hopeful. How are you?
But don't we pine for the America that wasn't tribal all the time? Do you remember this?
That wasn't what
you
all the time?
Growing up tribal. Just tribal. Exponentially every single day. And I wanted to remind people that I saw part of what was said on TV, and I'm not saying I saw everything that was in those emails from the Ricketts father, but I want to remind people that if he was talking about Islam and Muslims specifically, that's not a race, that's not racial, that's a religion. I think almost every race in this world has people that are involved in Islam. Now, we generalize because we ultimately default because we're human and we're fallible, but Islam is not a race. If you are, you know, saying bad things about Christians,
right,
or Muslims or Hindus, that's not racist.
It's a religion.
Right.
That's a religious bias thing.
Right.
So it's not racist. I wanted to make sure we clear that up.
All right, that's fair.
Give my two cents, all right?
But that said, what needs to happen now?
And does this affect anybody going to Cubs games? That's what I want to know. Is this going to change anybody's mind? Be honest.
I think in the short term, yes. But I think in the long term, no, because we're so desensitized to everybody tribal now. Everybody's fighting, calling people racist and bigots and biased and white supremacist. It's boring. It's yawn. You know what I mean? It doesn't have any merit anymore. It's the wolf being cried about.
Why doesn't it have any merit anymore? I don't understand that.
Because we hear it all the time. If you
but
watch
it doesn't
TV
make it right.
Radio. No, it does not. No, it does not make it right. But look what we are with other things, right? There's other things that I don't want to mention because, you know, that are bad, that go against the Bible and go against things that we would never thought of 60, 70 years ago, but, you know, you're allowed to do this, and I'm bored because you say you're proud to do it. I don't care. I'm going to move on with my day.
Yeah, but if you don't care, that's one thing, and you just chalk it up to, you know, oh, that guy's just having his own issues. But I don't think we should continue accepting it.
No, we shouldn't, but we're going to, because there's too much of it every day. You're right. We should not. But we're humans, and we're fallible, and this is part of the negative aspect of human nature.
But didn't it seem to get better for a while, Don, and now it's getting worse again?
No, I think it got worse. You know, I think it got worse sometime between, I don't know, 2 and 6 years ago, with this administration and the last administration and the hyper avenue of 24-hour news media, and now the internet and Twitter. It's just bad. It's just bad. It's not going to get any better either. I don't have any hope for my society anymore. I don't.
It has to get better. The generation of kids growing up, I think, are more accepting than even our generation, and hopefully they hold the keys to the future, and hopefully it gets better.
You know, I hope so, but we have two Americas now, and they're completely different places.
It has to be broken in order to get fixed, though, doesn't it, Don?
Come on, yes.
I'm trying to talk you off the ledge.
I'm glad you're optimistic about
that. Don, that's the only thing we can be right now. Otherwise, it's like, why continue? You just got to have that hope that someday this will get better again. Because history repeats itself. There are crappy times in history, and it gets better. Don, please, be with me.
I'm glad you're optimistic. I hope it's contagious, and I hope more people speak out about the optimism of the future.
All right.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Don. Wendy, I had a standing ovation left over from last night that I didn't use. I just gave you one.
Thank you.
You got a standing ovation from me.
If we give up, then why wake up every day?
There's no question about it. And to your point, I think you're right. I think for the most part, kids are far more colorblind than ever before. Not just colorblind, religious blind, culture blind.
They're more accepting.
Far more. So why does it seem like every day? It doesn't seem like every day. Every day there's another story about somebody who has either done or said or made some sort of racist remark or gesture or something. I don't know what floodgate opened where that's the thing now?
I don't know. It has to get better because I don't know if it can get any worse.
Almost a second standing ovation. I was starting to stand. I started to stand, and then I realized.
I gave myself one on that.
All right, somebody stood. All right, we'll take a break, and then more of your thoughts on this. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Miss Optimism is feeling like it's time to share. I'm sorry.
Your sash is crooked. Your Miss Optimism sash is just tilted to the left.
We have a Sweet Allie's Valentine's Day treat box. Can I just say, and you can win this, all right? Just be the fifth caller right now, 312-981-7200. It features Sweet Allie's sweet and savory gluten-free baked goods. Sweet Allie's Bakeries are located in Hinsdale and Glenview. They're awesome. Go to sweetalis.com to learn more. If you don't win this, maybe you don't have money to go buy this Valentine's Day treat box. Please, everyone do me a favor this Valentine's Day.
What is it?
Say something kind to someone.
Oh,
that's
not a lot to ask. To a stranger or to somebody you know?
I like that.
Either or.
I love that sweater you're wearing today, Wendy.
Right, I'm not wearing a sweater, but
Steve
nice
Bertrand
try.
To the rescue.
I gave him my best shot.
That was so nice.
Teresa, I'm going to say something kind to you. Thank you for calling and being the fifth caller, and thank you for listening. And how would you like a Sweet Allie's Valentine's Day treat box?
That would be awesome. Is this Wendy?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I love you.
There's a nice thing. Wasn't that nice?
I love you right back.
That was so nice.
I hope my husband's listening. He's going to freak out.
Oh.
Does he love Bill?
Yeah.
He loves you, Wendy.
Oh.
Well, I could say something nice, but I better keep it off the air. All right. Well, we will set you up. Sweet Allie's, I don't know if you're gluten-free or not, but I'm telling you, you won't notice. This stuff is really amazing, and there's a whole Valentine's Day treat box for you. And have a nice Valentine's Day.
That's so sweet. I really appreciate it. Thanks, you guys.
You're welcome.
You can go to sweetallies.com, sweetalis.com. What?
You got the ball rolling. I like that. Everyone's saying nice things now. You started something.
When you say something nice to someone...
I see a rainbow outside and a unicorn.
But when somebody says something nice to
it's contagious.
But
or
some,
you can go, what the hell's up with that guy saying nice stuff?
Something's I'll tell you, something's wrong. In this day and age, when someone just out of the blue says something that's nice, it takes you a minute to, like, what do you need?
Something.
Right. Should it be like that?
Nope. Should not.
Is that a new hat, Wendy? Because it looks great.
I'm not wearing a hat. Will you shut up? You, I cannot be nice to. All right, Steve's on the line. Steve, we were talking about this Ricketts situation and religion and the Cubs. What are your thoughts?
Well, first, thank you for making me laugh on my drive. The Cubs never said that the old man didn't get money from the Cubs, that if they eventually sell it, he won't get part of the profit. When the old senile man in Los Angeles did the racial things, he had to sell his basketball team. Unless the father has no control, no interest monetarily in the Cubs, I think they should have to sell it because he's not a nice man. Plus the fact, how many people are going to leave his brokerage firm now because of that?
Oh, that's a good
question.
That's
interesting.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why you hear more of it now, 50 years ago, you didn't text. You didn't have records of emails.
Yeah.
If you said something racially insensitive to somebody on the phone or in person, it was your word versus theirs. You could deny it.
Right.
Now
it just went away.
Written proof. Emails don't go away. I don't care if you delete it. Somehow they show up.
That's a great point, Steve. Thank you for your opinion.
Well, there's a difference. Steve, go ahead. I don't know if you're going to illustrate the same point with Donald Sterling, who owned the Clippers or not. He was the direct owner of the L.A. Clippers. In this case, Mr. Ricketts is the father of the owners, but his money was...
No, you don't know that. You don't know how the ownership is set up. You just know the son is the spokesman.
Right. Everything I read yesterday led me to believe that it was seed money from the father that helped buy the Cubs, but that he's not the direct owner of the Cubs. He's not listed as a direct owner, and you legally have to do that.
But if he gave them $500 million to buy the Cubs, he would have had it. They would have had to pay tax on it. You think they would have paid tax on $500 billion as a gift?
Well,
Think about it.
I know there's all sorts of tax loopholes when it comes to stuff like that. I don't know what they did to purchase the team, but I would hate to see the Cubs have to sell the franchise because something that their father said. That would be horrible, wouldn't it?
But I would just like to know if he has any monetary interest in the Cubs.
I'm sure somebody's looking into that right now. I'm positive.
Thank you for calling, though. We've got to run, Steve.
Okay.
Steve Bertrand, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to point out more directly, he owned DNA Info. He was the guy behind DNA Info in Chicago and New York and all of that. Now, that's defunct now, but, you know, and I know many people who work there and wonderful people, and I'm so sorry they lost their jobs, but I'm glad they're being spared this right now.
You know what's interesting? As I read up about him.
Because it certainly doesn't reflect them.
Right, of course not. As I was reading about Joe Ricketts yesterday, he's been very philanthropic in terms of giving money both to pro-Trump groups and anti-Trump groups. He spreads the money very, very evenly. And if you'll remember, a little over a year ago, Donald Trump singled he and his wife out and said that he knew things about them that he could divulge. And that story kind of fizzled after a couple of days. To my knowledge, he never really went beyond saying that. But there was a day or two where everybody was saying, oh, I wonder what he knows about them. But then nothing ever happened.
That's a good point, Bill.
Yeah.
All right. People still go to Cubs games?
Yeah. There's no question about it. I mean, there were a lot of people in an uproar, and rightfully so, at the things that he said. But I can't imagine a scenario where Major League Baseball would say to the Cubs, no, that's it. You got to sell the team now based on what your dad said. I can't imagine that ever happening.
I agree with you on that.
All right. John Duffy's coming up in just a little bit, and then Victoria Gotti, the daughter of John Gotti, after that. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. And our guest is Dr. John Duffy, making a triumphant return, or what I imagine will be a triumphant return to the show. How are you, John?
I'm great, and
nice
I'm hoping it's triumphant.
I haven't
thought about that.
I have a feeling it will be.
Always is.
It always is. All right. There was a story last week that as soon as the story was coming out, I thought of you. And then a texter said, this is John Duffy territory. You need to ask John this question. So here was the story. It's a little boy, and he's playing in his grandmother's yard, and he wanders off, and he's gone for 3 days, 2.5 days.
Right.
And they finally find him, and it's a miracle because yes. the weather was horrible. It was rainy. It was wet. He was near this forest preserve with all kinds of sinkholes, and the kid could have fallen in a hole.
Yep.
No one expected the happy, happy outcome of they found him, and he's happy, and he's healthy.
Right. People expected something very,
they thought that he was going to turn up dead. Oh, nobody
absolutely.
Wanted that.
Absolutely.
So
right.
the kid comes back, and they say, how did you survive? You're a little kid. I think he's 3 or 4 or something. How did you do this? And he said, well, a bear found me, and the bear took care of me, and a bear kept me warm. And my theory was that in the kid's mind, that's what happened, that a bear found him and took care of him.
Yeah.
But in reality, it did not. What happened?
Yeah, wait, so, how do you know in reality it did not?
Can I just add one more wrinkle to this?
Yes.
This is Life of Pi.
Yes, it is.
Right, right.
Yes,
good
is.
Point, Steve. Yeah,
yeah,
so
right.
in a lot of ways, it's probably very similar in that it's also kind of like the Castaway movie where, you
Wilson.
Know, Wilson, right?
Yes.
So, you know, you create something that's going to help you and save you in your mind, right? And you can rely on this entity and it carries you through this traumatic time. And it probably didn't hurt the imagery that he was freezing, he was traumatized, he was scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mind, especially of children are amazing at kind of creating these imaginary friends that are going to
protect them,
be with them, you know, make them less lonely at times of stress. And undoubtedly, that's precisely what happened. And I agree with you. I think that child would pass a lie detector.
Oh,
that
yeah.
a bear helped him.
That a bear
yes.
was there.
That's
yeah.
where Leah Brandschmidt and Oreo Lekas, my imaginary friends, came. Tell me those are not creative names.
Those are excellent names. Those are imaginary friends?
Yeah, Leah Brandschmidt and Oreo Lekas. And the reason I was late is they were my friend Carol's cousins, and we were hanging out at the library.
And did they bring you comfort to know that they were with
no, they,
you?
They were just an excuse because I was running late that day. But my mom believed me because, well, she didn't believe me, but she laughed at me because of those names. And what kid's going to lie and say they were at the library?
Right, right. Well, I work with a right, good point. I work with a lot of kids who kind of have these entities and will revisit them, even in their teenage years
oh,
from
really?
Time to time. Yeah, honestly, you know, so this is not that unusual thing. I think he was in extraordinary circumstances.
Well, I thought so, too. But the best part of the story for me was that there were two other kids over a long span of time. There was
one
a kid in the
1800s.
Yeah. 1880 something, and then the other one was in the 50s, who told almost identical stories where they were missing for a strangely long amount of time. And in both of those cases, much like this kid, they go, no, a bear came
wow.
and saw that I was alone and kept me warm and kept me safe.
But how do you know so, this didn't happen, you guys?
Because everybody involved, the kid's parents, the police, everybody, you know, when it comes to the part about the bear, they're like, wow, the important thing is,
yes,
is
the
that
child
he's
is safe and he's happy. And I think that in this case, the climate or the it was very unlikely that a bear would even be nearby.
Right.
I hope they find
less.
The bear just to prove all you naysayers wrong.
That would be amazing. I want to be here when the bear's here.
Right. All right. You wanted to talk about stressors
yeah.
and how they affect us. Please go for that. What's
right.
going on there?
So one thing I've noticed in my clientele, and not just kids, but parents and adults who live alone, is that the world is harsh out there, right? We're working, we're at school, we're trying to pay bills, and it's cold. And a lot of people say when they cross the threshold into their home, what they want is some kind of sanctuary. They want it to be relaxed mm-hmm. and easy. But what too many people feel when they walk into their home is more stress. And so my press here is to think about the vibe you create. So there's this Marie Kondo thing.
Oh, I love her.
Right,
does
right.
Does it spark joy? I did some of it. I'm doing it a little slower, but it does. When things are cluttered in your house, it creates a lot more stress for you.
No doubt. And I think most of us are kind of unaware until we clear things out, like, wow, this feels way better. And then there's the feng shui idea of, you know, where do you place things? But there's also kind of this emotional tone that you create. So a lot of kids will tell me, like, I walk into the threshold of my house and I'm afraid my parents have looked at my grades and I'm going to get in trouble. somehow.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so I'm going to escape to my room and put in my earbuds and I'm going to watch Parks and Recreation and just escape the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a sanctuary. It's more like, you know, I feel like I've got to escape.
Yeah.
Even this place that should be calm. In contrast, I've worked with some parents who recognize, yeah, this is a stressful time for my kids. So finals are this week. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, what treat do you want tonight? We're going to take 10-minute study breaks every hour, and we're going to have treats, or we're going to play a quick game or something like that to ease the tension, ease the vibe. And I think when we do that, when we attend to it, then kids will report to me, oh, yeah, life is way better at home.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think sometimes we bring so much home, and we want, especially parents, we want our kids to be successful so badly that we will find ourselves unwittingly, with the best of intentions, laying into them, telling them, you know, you're not doing good enough, or you've got to get to homework, put Fortnite down, put the phone down, and let's go. And that's fine to an extent, but at some point, you have this tipping point of stress.
Yes.
And you want to stay on the right side of the tipping point.
And everybody's stress in any family structure, everybody's stress is a different type of stress.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. If you think about it, some people have work-related stress.
Yeah.
Some people are, if you're in charge of the house, there's an awful lot of stress now in just running a home, especially if there are kids involved, right? There's travel teams and there's bills to pay and there's groceries and, you know, people have to get certain places. It's busy. Life is frenetic. And we need, in any given day, I think we need some degree of calm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a proponent of, people always say, you should leave your stress, like your work stress or your school stress, leave it at the office or leave it at school. Once you come home, that should be a stress-free zone. Do you believe in that or not?
I don't know if you can do that entirely.
Yeah.
But I like the ritual of it. I used to have a long commute from work to home.
Yeah.
And I would take that commute and I would listen to some music and I would decompress. And by the time I walked in the door, I was very relaxed. Now I have a 3-minute walk, as Wendy, you know.
Oh. I almost hit him the other day.
Right.
Oh.
And so sometimes I walk in the door, and this part of this comes from the way our house works, is once in a while, my wife Julie and I will recognize things are more tense than they need to be here. We really don't have anything wrong. Maybe
right.
We can bring the stress level down, change the vibe a little bit.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of willfully trying to exert that.
Too bad there's not something on your thermostat where you could adjust the heat and the stress level at the same time.
Hook that up to your Nest.
Brilliant.
Right. That would be excellent. Dr. John Duffy is here. If you have any questions or comments, reach us at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Regular guest Dr. John Duffy is here. You can listen to his podcast called Better with his wife Julie Duffy. You can read the available parents, drjohnduffy.com. You're doing a new podcast now with Heidi Stevens
on
the Chicago Tribune.
I am. I just refuse to stop talking.
She's got great articles about being a parent.
She really does. She really does. And kind of these slice of life articles. I always find Heidi's column to be refreshing in light of every other headline. It's kind of like this little beacon of good news mm-hmm. in the midst of all this bad news.
Oh, so, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm excited to be doing
That's
that.
Great.
Yeah,
that's great. Is a little bit of stress in your life or something to worry about a horrible thing? Don't we kind of need something to keep us going a little bit? Everything can't be perfect.
Absolutely. You know, there's something called the Yerkes-Dodson rule, which I always got a kick out of the fact.
Oh, Yerkes.
Yerkes. I always got a kick out of the fact that two guys came up with this, but effectively it says, unless if you don't have any stress, you're going to be a couch potato. You're
right.
Not going to get much done.
Yeah.
If you have too much stress, you're in distress and you're not going to get much done or you're not going to be very effective. So there's this at the top of the bell curve is this something called eustress or flow. There's a guy down at University of Chicago, Dr. Csikszentmihalyi, I think is the way you say
Good
his name.
Golly.
I know, right? That came up with this idea based on a game where Michael Jordan made six three-point shots in a row from the same spot. And you'll remember this moment. He turns around and he shrugs the camera like, I don't know. I don't know why this is working.
Happened. Yeah.
And the argument is, because he's got just the right amount of stress to be in the zone, in the flow. And so, yes, you need a certain level of stress. If he had no stress in that moment, those would have been bricks.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'll go on.
No, there was just this article. I was telling you about this off the air 2 days ago from The Guardian. The truth about anxiety. Without it, we wouldn't have hope. without no. any, with no anxiety, if everything was copacetic, you're right. You wouldn't get off the couch. You wouldn't do anything. You wouldn't challenge yourself.
Exactly. So there, we all need some degree of anxiety. And so the idea, anxiety has such a terrible name in our culture because it feels so diagnostic. But if you think about it as just like just enough stress to perform well,
yeah,
we need that. Kick. We need that little bit of boost. That's where adrenaline comes from. That's where our optimal performance comes from, is having some degree of anxiety.
Right.
And so the key for most of us is not to overstress ourselves so that we affect our performance in a negative way.
Isn't everybody's level, everybody's capacity just a little bit different too?
Definitely.
It would have to be.
Oh, absolutely.
What
absolutely.
You can handle and what you can't.
What you can handle, what you can't, what you're interested in taking on and what you're not. The benchmark I usually use is if something is presented to you and you're afraid of it and you decide to opt out because you're afraid, that's just an anxious reaction that probably isn't very healthy. If Right. you decide, I'm nervous, but I'm going to try this anyway, then you're in the zone. Then you're in a place where you're probably at least laying the groundwork to operate functionally and
right,
properly.
Right, right.
I'm yeah. laughing because there was one day I came in and something like totally frustrating happened on the way to work, and you gave me like that dad look, like, Wendy, every morning you come in like
yeah.
this. I do. I almost need to feed off that, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, and I think some of us are surprised that every day brings some anxiety, and we lament that, but we underestimate our degree of tenacity and grit that we can overcome that, because most things that we're presented with, we can manage, we can overcome, you know? And sometimes our mind tricks us into thinking we can't, thinking like, ooh,
this is the end.
Yeah, I feel this little pang of anxiety, so I'm going to have to opt out of
yeah.
this thing, you know? Like, and that is the last thing you want to do. When
right.
you feel that little bit of anxiety, it might be a cue like, this might be the, I want to take a step toward this, not away.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can we talk to Vicky? Vicky's been on hold with something to add to this. Vicky, how are you? It's Dr. John Duffy and us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I taught middle school for 25 years, and so with all those raging hormones all day, and
wow,
so
you survived.
at the end of the day, I would shut my door, and I would actually sweep my room, wipe my boards. I'd be like 15, 20 minutes in total quiet. And my colleagues would ask me, why do you do that when you have custodians? And I said it was my time to decompress before
Makes
getting
sense.
Into the car and then having to come home and face my own children.
Oh, that's brilliant, Vicky. And did it work? Did you feel calmer? Was that ritual like useful to you?
I did. And, you know, the part about it that was so amazing, too, is that the custodians were so happy they could skip my room that when I needed them for a really big job, they never hesitated.
Well, perfect. It seems to see now you, Vicky, figured out a way to make that work for you. Good job.
Well, and you need to understand, I used to always tell my parents that the reason their children did not get put out of my room was that if they had had testing and drugs when I was in middle school, I would have been certified ADHD and heavily medicated. Hmm. So
you're a good teacher.
I hoped I was. I've been retired for 4 years now and realized how many things I didn't do during the time that I was a teacher.
Do you miss the kids?
Oh, I miss the children. Oh, yes, I do. I don't miss a lot of the other stuff that went with it, like parents and administrators, but I miss the kids.
Well, thank you very much. Enjoy your retirement. Speaking of students, I saw you listening earlier when we were talking about we need hope and things look very bleak when that caller called and was despondent about racism. And the kids today are so much different. Don't you think we have hope for the future?
Yes. I was up applauding you as well. Seriously,
oh, I got a standing ovation for you.
Oh, how about that?
Look at that.
Because I totally agree. I think sometimes we in our generation, we miss this idea because our kids can be frustrating at times. And sometimes we hear the worst of what they do. But I have the luxury of talking to a lot of kids a lot of the time. And when you get them, even at their worst moments, you realize, oh, yeah, these are smart, thoughtful, kind people at their core. And there is an awful lot of hope coming down the pike with this next generation. You know, so I feel exactly like you do. I do not feel despondent about that.
Along those same lines, since racism has been in the news so much the last couple of days or weeks, It's learned behavior, isn't it? That's not innate behavior to be racist, is it? That's something that's learned through whatever means you're learning things.
Absolutely. 100% learned behavior. And this is like kind of a clarion call to parents, right? Like, you know, if we depict racism, even in a lighthearted fashion, you know, I will admit, like, this happened in my house growing up, and I was kind of oblivious to it. In retrospect, I'm kind of appalled at what happened in my home.
Yeah.
But now, the beauty of kids today is if a parent does something or says something racist, the child will call that parent out.
Right.
You know, 99% of the time, kids will not tolerate racism, sexism, anything that's anti-LGBTQ, anything that's not kind. Kids are not going to tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, bullying is on a downswing, even though you hear a lot about online bullying, and that does happen. There's a little bit of groupthink around that, but by and large, that's on a downswing. That happens less than it did, you know, 2 decades ago. Filed.
So that's
margin.
Progress. Good.
A
we were hoping
progress.
There was some progress.
Yeah.
We found
I'm
some.
Hopeful. Yeah. I have miles and miles and miles and miles of hope.
How about that?
Wow.
That's from a musical Wendy's working on.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that called Jiminy Cricket? Gotta have hope, miles and miles and miles of hope, or what? Maybe it's not hope.
I don't think it's Jiminy Cricket. It's in a musical.
Oh. It's a definitely. It's, yeah, I'm not. Yeah. I don't picture a cricket singing. It
you
might
gotta
be
have heart.
What?
It's you got to have heart. Not you got to have hope.
Well, I changed it.
Oh, all right.
Right. It's a new musical.
Try
whole
suing
new thing.
Wendy now. She changed the lyric. Cut it out.
Hey, Weird Al did it.
Right.
I can do it, too.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming up. How can people reach you?
Okay, so...
and are you on the air here soon or just your podcast for now?
I think I will be on the air with Bella Gandhi sometime soon in the next week or two. And hopefully I'm back with you guys in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find everything about me and where I'm going to be at drjohnduffy.com.
Perfect. Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you being here. Dr. John Duffy, everybody. Thank you, Eric. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Victoria Gotti, the daughter of Mafia chieftain John Gotti, the Dapper Don, the Teflon Don. Their story is told in a made-for-TV movie that premieres this week on Lifetime called Victoria Gotti, My Father's Daughter. Victoria, thanks for being here. How are you?
How are you?
Really great to talk to you.
We watched the trailer, and I cannot wait to see this.
Thank you.
We all have. We are all obsessed with the movies The Godfather. The Sopranos was a big hit. We are so into this, and I'm interested to see your side of the story. It wasn't all peaches and cream for you growing up, the daughter of a family boss, was it?
No, not at all. I mean, everybody, like I said, I get asked this question a lot, and everybody has their own perception. You know, you could have 4 siblings, 5 siblings, 2 siblings in a household, and everybody, you know, sees their childhood, their upbringing through their own eyes. And this is a movie specifically about my relationship with my father and what I've seen from. It's really about my life growing up. From as far back as I can remember to today, you know, till his death, actually. You know, it was just all of the strifes, how I took it in, how I perceived it. And I think a lot of people will be very surprised at the misconceptions that they all, you know, were led to believe with the headlines and this and that and that. So it was good to kind of purge the project. It was good.
Victoria, was the information ever kept from you? Did your father ever say, I'd prefer that my kids don't know about the family business, we'll try to hide it, or was that never an issue?
He sheltered us as long as he possibly could until we were old enough to know in our own way, you know, either by hearing about it, reading about it, watching it on the news, you know, but
yeah.
If you would ask him or whatever, he was just, it was like censored. You did not talk. Don't ask, don't tell.
Now, Bill, you have 2 twin daughters. They're 22 years old.
Yeah.
You're a little protective of them. What was it like having a father such as yours? I bet he was very protective of you and the people you dated.
Oh, very, very. I actually met and married my very first boyfriend, which I think kind of represents, you know, I was raised in a household, though it was not that long ago, where we're not talking about, you know, the 60s, even the 70s. It was, you know, more modern, much more modern time, and a lot more, you know, feminism going on. But yet I couldn't wait to, you know, grow up, get out on my own, and just go. But yet I met and married my first boyfriend, which a lot of people today are like, what? You know, it's like almost unheard of in those years. But, you know, I was raised by my father, who was very, very strict. You know, you had to be the good girl. You know, you couldn't, there was no fooling around. There was no dating. There was no, you had to be the good girl with a good reputation. Your reputation was sacrilegious. You know, you could never, once it went away, you couldn't get it back. So this is the mindset that I was raised with. So protective, yes, he was very much protective. I don't think I brought another boy home before my ex-husband.
And that's Carmine you're referring to. And
yes.
You went on to have three kids. How was your father as a grandfather?
Oh, he was terrific. I mean, the kids adored him. They took his death so badly that, I mean, I was surprised because they were very young when he did pass. And I was so surprised at just, you know, how tight the connection between each of them was. And they each had a separate and different relationship with them. He always kept it unique with each one of them. And he would play up each trait in, you know, the character traits in one versus the likes, dislikes in the other, and have different conversations prepared when they would go visit him, you know, or when they were even younger and he was home and they would see him and be with him, you know, and play. I mean, he ran the house like really, really a tight ship. We had to bring the grandchildren to him, my siblings and I, certain amount of times a week. You know, he wanted to see them. He had, you know, made time for them, and he expected us to comply, to be there. I mean, they had, you know, family time came first. That was it. So my children grew up remembering that and knowing that, and then, of course, missing that.
We're talking with Victoria Gotti.
So important with him.
Victoria is the daughter of John Gotti. There is a film on Lifetime this Saturday at 7 o'clock, February the 9th, My Father's Daughter, that tells the relationship between Victoria Gotti and her father. The man you married, Victoria, Carmine, an Italian, if you had fallen in love with a non-Italian, how would your dad have reacted to that?
Oh, that's what he wanted, to be very honest. He preferred someone, you know, much different. And he would always say to me, you know, it was different with you. It's different with you. And every time I would go back and argue with him and, you know, wonder why and say, why can't I date this person? Why is it, you know, forbidden? What's happening? You know, his attitude and answer to me was, I want better for you. I've always wanted better for you. This is not for you. He's not for you. You know, this is common. I had bigger and better expectations for, you know, your education. I did not waste this, you know, on for you to sit home. In other words, there were, one little example was my ex-husband was very traditional too. And he came from a mindset in a family where you believe, you know, the man worked, the man provided. And if he did not, if the wife did work or have a career or life or her own identity, that was kind of like a blow to their manhood. It was like as if they couldn't supply or provide enough. I came with a career, and that was, you know, I was very young when I met him, but I was determined to have that career no matter what, and I did. And he once went to my dad to see if he could stop me from doing it, and my father said, absolutely not. He said, are the kids fed? Are they clean? Is the house taken care of? I never had any, you know, the maids, the nannies, the this, the that. I did it myself. And my father said, because we were very old, the men were old-fashioned, and he said to my ex-husband, is all of her every day, you know, are they done? Is she lapsing in something that I don't know about? And my ex-husband would say, well, no, but my father said, then that's it. You know why she's going to write her books, and you know why she's going to have her career as a journalist? Because I said so. And that was it. you know, my ex-husband was kind of, you know, really upset. He just didn't get it. He would come home, you know, and go on and on with me. I don't understand why you have to work. I don't support this. There's just no reason for it. And we would argue a lot over that. And I would say to him, I don't know why, I just don't support it. I'm here for everybody. I'm here for you. I'm here for the kids. I'm always here. It's not like I miss things. I do this with my own time. You know, I didn't get, you know, there was no one that was going to stop me from getting what I had wanted or doing what I wanted to do. And that was a big source of grief in our marriage. I don't think he ever thought when we were younger that I would take it, you know, sure, to the fullest. I think he thought I'd just become comfortable and stay home.
Yeah.
Make babies.
I am half Italian. My grandfather was born in Venice, so Northern Italian. And as I'm listening to you talk about this, why is it that Italian men love their mamas so much, but not their wives? They treat their mothers with such respect, but not their wives.
Well, you know what it is? There's a saying, as you know, I'm sure, being half Italian, they say if he's good to his mom,
he'll be a great husband, yes.
And it's interesting because, you know, I remembered that, and I remembered growing up and that's the first sign that I watched for, and I did see signs, you know, that my ex was, whatever his mom wanted, he strived to get because they had lost, you know, he lost his father at a very young age. So him and his brothers had stepped in kind of, you know, to fill that void. And he was also, on the other hand, you know, very good and generous to me. I did not know that he had manic depressive disorder. Wow. I did not know a lot of things about him because I was this, you know, different kind of a girl, kind of very sheltered and raised differently. I had never spent one night away from my family, away from my home, until the day I married, until the day I had, you know, went on my honeymoon.
Hmm.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know, you know.
Victoria, I know that this is a very difficult chapter in the Gotti family story, but I'm curious to hear your take on this. The loss of your brother Frank, the story has been told, and I'm just curious, what as an insider, for people who don't know, Frank Gotti was 12 years old, he was riding a mini bike, and a neighbor hit him, and Frank died as a result of that, and then that man died very soon thereafter. What were your thoughts on that whole period?
Well, that's not something that's ever been proven or come to light, but there's been so many different stories about it that I think I was, you know, really closer than anybody, you know, really in the mix, because when my brother died, my mother was pretty much catatonic for about, I remember her stepping back for a few years. I mean, it took her a long time to get over that, long time. So I went from being a, you know, young college student to suddenly having to run a household and take care of a three-year-old and, you know, do things that I didn't expect to do. I mean, we had our chores, we did our things, we were, you know, like an old-fashioned home, you had to earn your allowance and all that, but this was not something I was ever, you know, ready for, but did do, stepped into those positions. The thing was, I mean, the hardest thing for me, besides losing him and having that front seat and watching all of it, was, I think, being home with my mother to watch her all the time. And what people don't know is that she tried to kill herself three times on my watch, and it was the hardest thing in the world, to, you know, see, like, the doctors come running in the middle of the night and the doors flying open and all the flurry of activity. And then one night, you know, night after night, I would see, ironically, what the world also doesn't know is that the man that hit my brother was a drinker.
Yeah.
He was hit by a drunk driver. That was a fact that I think most of the world knew. But at the end, and he dragged him pretty much a block and a half, didn't even know he had a child attached to his car until I think three neighbors literally stood in front of his car banging. But at the end of that, our yards literally touched. I mean, how ironic.
Yeah.
They literally touched back fences. So at that point, I would have to sit there and hear all the story. You know, like, they would be out there. He would be out there every night drinking his beers up with his friends, and the barbecue was going and the music going. And I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
I don't know how my mother, you know, half out of it anyway could go through, and then one night she loses it. She just completely loses it, and it's a big, you'll see in the movie what happens. It really is kind of a shocking part of the movie.
Yeah.
The movie we're talking about, My Father's Daughter, it's an inside look. You produced this as well, and Victoria Gotti, My Father's Daughter, it airs on Lifetime this Saturday. I can't wait to see it. You and I are about the same age, and we have the same taste in hair and makeup, big and blonde and lots of makeup.
Well, thank you. There you go. Kindred spirit.
Yes, it is so nice to talk to you, and really, it looks really good. Victoria Gotti, My Father's Daughter, Lifetime this Saturday, February 9th, 7 p.m. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks. You guys have a great day.
Thank you, too. Good luck. It's Victoria Gotti. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll close things off. That's coming up in a little bit.
All right, I want to invite people to something, because there's limited space, and I want to get this out in the open. You can join me.
Whatever it is, Wendy, I'm coming. I can't wait to be there. If you're inviting people, I'm people. I'll be there.
It's a girls' night out.
Cannot come. I cannot attend, because you just said it's a girls' night out. So good luck with your girls' night out.
Well, if this works, maybe
I'll
we'll
have
extend
beef jerky.
It. you could join me. You need to enter for the chance to win. This is an experimental thing that I'm pretty excited to do. It's a cooking class.
Oh.
I've done them before. They're super fun. It's at Marcel's Culinary Experience in Glen Ellen. It's happening February 20th, which is a couple of Wednesdays from now. We're going to learn how to cook four savory dishes and a dessert. You'll walk away with those recipes in
hand. Why are guys not allowed to this?
Well, because we're just starting this out as a girls' night out kind of thing.
We're going to storm the castle.
Actually, we should invite the men so they can cook for us. But you'll also get an apron, make some new friends, and you'll have memories. It's going to be fun. These cooking classes are so fun and practical.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to
both
make
fun
something.
And practical.
Yeah, I just like doing it. And you will too. Enter today, WGNradio.com/contest. You need to hurry, though, because space is limited. And this is all sponsored by Grainberry Cereal, healthy cereal for your family.
I wanted to ask Victoria Gotti this question, and we didn't have time. They made a movie last year called Gotti.
Oh,
actually,
yeah.
It was made years ago. Finally got released. No, no, don't be sorry. That's right. John Travolta played the role of John Gotti movie. Did you see it?
I seem to remember seeing it as soon as you... Yes, because he was not very good.
It made almost everybody's 10 worst list of the year. I was anxious to see it, but the reviews were horrible on it. But interestingly, in that movie that was out last year, she, Victoria Gotti, John's daughter, was played by Kelly Preston, who was really John's wife. So that's,
I don't know what they got going
strange.
On in their relationship.
That's interesting casting.
But the weirdest part is when John Gotti was saying, "What? Weird."
Right. That was
don't touch the hair.
That was strange. Right. That was crazy. And Mr. Woodman was in it. Why was Mr. Woodman in Gotti?
Up your nose with a rubber hose.
Yeah. Hotsy Totsy was in it. That was crazy casting.
Totsy was in it.
Yeah.
With that same name.
Right. I know. All right, we'll take a break, then we'll head to the stream.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.